Blog Talk Radio.
Sure what was going on there with the audio. Sorry about that, guys. There was a song that I wanted to play for the intro, and I think it is perfectly in line with what I wanted to talk about tonight. So I am going to play it. Sorry about that mix-up, so bear with us here.
Just as I
night, everybody, and that was Just As I Am on LSD, I do believe. I do apologize for that. Had a flashback there, thought we were back on the 8-track tape player. I've got a guest caller in that I'm going to bring up right now. And who do we have here, 812?
I was just calling in to listen. PC Zach Kenneth, and I wanted to hear your show. This is Bill.
I understand, Bill. I didn't recognize the number, and I apologize for the 8-track. We have nothing but the best in technology here on BTR.
That didn't bother me a bit.
It was horrid. But I'm going to put you back on mute. If you want to holler or chime in, just raise your hand, sir.
I will. Thank you.
You bet. And guys, that song is one that I wanted to play tonight because it fits in with what I want to talk about. And I've heard a lot of discussion recently, really a lot of discussion picking up about the Republican Party and the fact that the last two elections they've been unable to field a candidate worth a darn. My humble opinion aside, I believe that Ron Paul was a fantastic candidate. They refused to embrace him. And I think that speaks volumes about the socioeconomic makeup of those people who are Republican voters. Not all of them, but a lot of them. One of the things I've talked about on this program in the past, and I'm going to reiterate it quite a bit today, we got to stop with the left-right identity garbage. And that's exactly what it is. It's garbage. They're better at it than we are. And it only serves to divide us. And it shifts the focus away from what's truly important. What I mean by that is not trying to diminish anyone's faith or belief in God. But when we look at what Immanuel Kant was talking about, that morality comes from freedom, when we allow ourselves to embrace the idea that government has the authority to diminish certain freedoms because they're freedoms that we don't agree with, like homosexuality. When we embrace that government has the right or the authority or the ability to diminish that choice, then we necessarily embrace that government has the right to diminish other freedoms or rights. And of course, when they turn their attention towards a right or a freedom that we are fully supportive of and that we enjoy and enjoy exercising that freedom, well, then the tables have turned and we get our dander up. And this is how, one method, how we're able to be divided. And we ought to embrace the wisdom of God. God saw fit to give each of us the free will to make our own choices. I would ask each of you, who then do you believe that you are, that you can impose God's law or anyone else's law on your fellow man? God didn't see fit to do that. He gave you free will. He allowed you to choose. Now, as we all know, and I've discussed before, freedom also carries along with it responsibility. See, when we make a choice of our own free will and not being forced into it, then we and we alone are responsible for that choice and the consequences or the outcome of that choice. It's really very simple. And I think this is one of the driving forces behind the out-of-control government. Because given the ability to allow someone else to be responsible and make those choices for us, well, it seems fairly obvious at this point in our society that a large majority are in favor of that. They don't have to be responsible, or at least that's what they believe. I believe that they will be held accountable for all of their choices. I believe I will be too. I believe all of us will ultimately be held to account for every moment. But we're not going to, ladies and gentlemen, win the argument or win the day or turn the tide simply by sheer numbers and force. Doesn't work that way. It never has worked that way. And it never will work that way. The way that we win hearts and minds is turning the debate, the conversation, back to the individual level. And we need to begin to question, where does government, your neighbor, get the authority to diminish your freedom, your rights? Where does that come from? Who granted the authority to steal from those people who get up and go to work every day to earn a living? Who granted them that authority? Where did that authority come from? Some people might say, well, it's in the Constitution that government has the authority to tax. All right. Government has the authority to tax through an excise. And I can give you a perfect example. If you're a farmer and you raise potatoes, you know exactly to the penny what it costs you to raise each potato based on your harvest. So you know what you need to charge for each potato in order to break even. You therefore know what you need to charge for each potato to make a profit. Profit is a tax on your neighbor or whomever is buying your potatoes. That doesn't make it a bad thing. However, when you tax a man based solely on his ability to earn a living, that's theft. And when you steal from that man the purpose for the theft, the use of the money, whatever the money goes to be used for, doesn't matter. When you hear the arguments of all the good that's being done with this welfare program or this social program, what you're hearing is an attempt at justifying theft. We're trying to justify an unlawful act and a sin. And of course, many people believe wholeheartedly with their whole being that this program or that program is a worthy program and it does good things, and all those might be absolutely true. But what they don't see is the damage and the devastation that is caused when they steal the proceeds to run or fund that program others. We're seeing the result, we're seeing the consequences of that today. And we've had generations, entire generations of families who've never worked, never aspired to work. And who can honestly blame them when many times they receive more money or value in benefits through the various programs than they ever would working a full-time job? And now we've included into this mixture health care. And while it may be an admirable goal to provide health care for all of the poor souls who cannot afford it on their own, look at what's occurring in the economy with businesses. Full-time employment is rapidly dwindling as a direct consequence of the implementation of Obamacare. That's a negative, not a positive. But all the positives in the world cannot justify violating the rights of a single individual, even if it benefits everyone else on the planet except one guy. Because once we accept that, well, gee, if we just kill this one guy, everybody in the world will be free. We've gone too far. You might be able to justify murdering that man. You might be thinking, well, gosh, if it really sets free every human being on Earth, we'd really have to consider taking the life of that one man. Because, after all, it seems like it's justified. The ends justify the means. But the danger is that we've now diminished the value of a single human life. Next time it might be 2, or 3, or 3,000, or 3 million. Once we head down that road, and once we accept that there is nothing, no act that's off limits, we can always come up with enough justification to justify doing anything. And we have. Look at what we have become, not just in America, not just in the United States, but mankind. Life has become very, very cheap. And it's not. It's really not. Every single one of you that's sitting here listening to the sound of my voice, you know inherently that it is an absolute miracle that we even survive the act of being born, much less live long enough to grow into some semblance of adulthood. It's an absolute miracle. And, you know, I was hearing today on the radio on my way to work this morning about those young women that were tragically killed out in San Mateo, California, in a limousine fire. And it happened very quickly. And three or four young women lost their lives in a blink of an eye. And of course, they're concerned about what happened, how it occurred. We know nothing about these women. And we don't need to. It's not up to us to determine or judge if they were of good character or of bad character. The point is that life is fragile, and it can be gone in a moment, in the blink of an eye. And here we sit, screaming and yelling, frothing at the mouth, angry, furious, enraged at one another because we see things differently. And we think perhaps if we can yell loud enough and often enough, long enough, hard enough, we can change their minds. Bring them over to our side. See, there shouldn't be sides. That's what I wanted to talk about. That's why I played that song as an intro, Just As I Am. You know, that works for every race. Just as I am, Lord. Here I am, just as I am. It's me. You know me. Just as I am. Works for every race, every gender. Works for every sexual orientation, every occupation, every devious proclivity, every sin, every evil, all of it. There is no sin too big. There is no sin too small. There is nothing human that the blood of Christ can't cure, can't redeem. And we're certainly not, ladies and gentlemen, we shouldn't fool ourselves into believing that if we go out and proselytize, that we ourselves will be saving souls, because we're not. We're not the ones that were on the cross. Christ is. That's his victory. Not ours. We're victorious with him. It's a shared thing. It's a relationship, as it should be. But it's not by our hand. In fact, it's because of our nature that it was necessary. I guess the point is that we can't keep hopping up and down, angry at the quote-unquote other side of the political aisle, of the religious ideology aisle, or any other aisle. We should stop dividing ourselves left and right, black and white, gay and straight. And what we ought to do is look at the real line of division. God and man. And all of the actions that we take to go to war with one another, with our fellow human beings. The result is we divide or separate ourselves from God. That's the real division. That's the real separation. Even those that deny Him, even those that deny Christ, deny God, say He doesn't exist, they're already separated. Why should you or I or anyone else try to further alienate that person? If they want to have a debate or a discussion, I'm all for that. You never know. There might be a word that's given that sparks a thought that changes a heart. But only God can do that. He can give me that word, most assuredly. But it's not me that is capable. I know I'm not capable at all. It doesn't mean that we don't try. But I think what it does mean, at least for me, is that we need to change the way we think about these things. And I believe wholeheartedly, as a Christian, as a patriot, as someone who embraces the idea that was and still can be America, that if you see your neighbor doing some act and it makes you angry or you disapprove and you think, huh, that's illegal, I'm calling the cops, you need to stop and re-examine just what it is you're talking about doing. And I'm not talking about if he's murdering someone in his backyard or molesting children or doing something horrid. Not that homosexuality isn't horrid. In my eyes, it is. It's disgusting. But that's none of my business. We need to stop convicting people. We need to stop imposing our idea of moral turpitude upon others. It's not up to us to judge. Yes, there are actions when someone undertakes them, if they are harmful to another individual, it is our duty and our job to step in and help that person fend off the attack or the trespass. But I think we're all adult enough here to understand exactly what I'm talking about. We need to re-examine that. Because often I hear people who are well-meaning, good-hearted people, who want government to force others to live the way they think they should live. But when it's done to them, they're the first ones to get their hackles up and fight back. And see, the other side feels the same way. And so the fight, well, it's never won. There's no victory. And government continues to grow larger and larger. And every day there's new dragons to slay. There's new programs to launch because there are new oppressions and new depressions and things that need fixed. New wheels that need to be greased. And it's unceasing. And it's never ending. That's what happens when we allow the loss of freedom and we step away from the responsibility that goes along with that freedom. That is the cost of freedom. Responsibility. You know, they say freedom isn't free, and that's true. Eternal vigilance and not shirking our responsibility. And we owe that responsibility not only to ourselves, but also to our children and their children, to our parents, to our neighbors. And if they get lost and they can't see it, and they lose sight of that responsibility, it's up to us to continue taking on that responsibility. Because we know that once responsibility is completely erased, we're done. It's over. We're pretty close to that now. I know it may seem like a small thing. I know to some of you it's not a small thing. My wife and I were discussing it the other day, this new move on the morning after pill, where it'll be available without a prescription and no age restrictions. What's the message that we're sending when we say, you know, 13-year-olds, 12-year-olds, 10-year-olds, I don't know, 9-year-olds, 8, 7, at what point does the pharmacist or the clerk say, well, you know, what are you doing in here buying condoms? Or what are you doing in here buying the morning after pill? And how much of a stretch is it to go from, you know, you've got these youngsters in here buying these contraceptives. Well, you know, it's their choice, and of course it's their free will. And just because it's a 45-year-old man that they're laying with, you know, that's really not a problem. That shouldn't be illegal. I mean, it was consensual, right? So that's where it's headed. There will be nothing sacred, ladies and gentlemen. Nothing. Not your children, not your parents, not your life. Nothing. We're almost there. We're darn close. Sad, really. It really is. It is sad to me to see how little so many value the gift of this life that we've been given. It's astonishing to me. I'm not afraid to lose it, but it's not mine to be frivolous with either.
And I hit those three.
There's that silly word again, responsibility. Shouldn't we all be taking responsibility? I think so. And I know you don't have your hand up, but I'm going to bring up Miss Linda. You've been in here for a long time, and I hope you weren't trying to get on, but I'm going to bring you up anyway if I can get this doggone switchboard to work. How are you, Miss Linda?
Fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Awesome monologue today. It's funny because Glenn talked about when he spoke at the NRA, I don't know if you saw any of the speech, talking about responsibility instead of saying, you know, he says, I think we need to, you know, revamp that little piece just for right now because we're so close to losing everything that we had back when they did the declaration and, you know, this blip on the radar of this freedom because it is not... you know, the way of the world. We are very, very, you know, what is it, 5% of the entire population ever has had this kind of freedom or lived under it. He says we should kind of tweak that Patrick Henry thing and say, give me responsibility or give me death, because we're on that precipice. People don't even know what freedom is, Ron. They don't even know, you know, they've not even just taken it for granted. They're buried in the wrong place, as you know. So.
Oh, I know. We've had, Linda, you and I, we've had that discussion before. People don't even have any concept.
There's no
of
clue.
What freedom actually means.
Right, because when you look at that history of it, when you look at the natural state of man, it's barbarism and tyranny. It has been up until that happened when we had the idea, which was America. And they don't realize how precious and fleeting it can be. They have no concept of it. We're watching it go away from us right now. It's horrifying. And when you talk about, you know, minding one's own business, and I agree with that, and proselytizing because they were talking in the Pentagon of, you know, prosecuting people who were proselytizing Christianity, whatever. I think a little evangelism is okay. You know, you don't have to beat the drum 7/24. But, you know, we, like you say, we should try to win a few souls. And as far as minding the business on the neighbors, of course, trying to help people that are possibly being strangled in the backyard by some madman or something, that's another story. But because where have we heard that song before of turning in one's neighbors? Oh, I know, old Soviet for one. Oh, yeah, that's not good. And,
well,
and with all these gun-grabbing things, oh, my God. I mean, that's just too slippery.
Look, and I hope no one, you know, mistakes what I'm saying. There's nothing wrong with spreading the good news. But if you look at Christ when he was on the earth, it wasn't his words that people were paying attention to. He spoke everywhere he went, and very few could even understand what he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
They always wanted some kind of demonstration, some miracle. That's what got all the attention. It wasn't
right.
necessarily his words. It was his deeds, his actions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot the same can be said for us. It's less about what comes out of our mouth and more about how we conduct ourselves daily.
Oh, yeah. It speaks much more volumes.
How we interact. You know.
And you know what? When you talk about how we're going to win these arguments, you know, we can go back and look at Martin Luther King. What he did was brilliant. I mean, he walked the walk, and besides just talking the talk, and it was through his actions, I believe, especially because, well, they had still state-run media, but not as bad as it is now. And the reason I think he was doing the things he did mainly was because he said once the truth gets out as to how people are being treated by the news media, it will wake people up and say, we don't like this. This is not good. So he had to do things peacefully and let the cameras show, look what's being done to these people who are not doing, even raising their voice, let alone anything else.
He took
the path of Gandhi, I think, in that sense.
Well, if you think about it, I mean, and you hit the nail on the head. It's not winning the argument, quite honestly. That's important, is it? It's not the argument that's important. What's important is winning the heart and mind of the individual.
Exactly.
Okay?
Right.
And what Martin Luther King did was demonstrated for all to see the vicious force that was being thrust upon them. And he was peaceful.
Right. So there was a definite contrast.
He did not fight back. And so their naked aggression
was
out there for everyone to see.
Mm-hmm.
Had they fought back, they would have said that they were resisting. And
they
were disobeying lawful orders and this, that, and the other. The same garbage that they use today.
Sure. Well, you know, when you talked earlier on the first part, and you talk about, you know, who grants the authority, well, when we look at what we have, well, we used to have a constitutional republic, but not much anymore. But even, let's say, with the thin veneer of what's left of the Constitution, what we're doing by consenting to all these, you know, entities and these bureaucratic Lilliputians in government, we're giving them the power because Yes. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. That is absolutely 100% correct. Only you can grant the authority for your rights to be diminished or trashed. And you do that by acquiescence, by silence.
Sure. That's why I'm trying to find better ways, and I just, you know, of dealing with, you know, questioning with boldness and trying to not win the argument, but let people, you know what I mean, get people to see, well, what I consider the truth as to what's going on, whether it's Common Core, whether it's Agenda 21, whether it's, you know, them coming after your property rights, wanting to take your guns away. And, you know, they just keep pushing, and they're going to push you right into a darn FEMA camp or a gulag, whatever you want to call it, because that's what they are. And, you know, tyranny happens when you've got what many of us call a rogue, illegitimate, globalist coup d'etat right now in our country, because we've allowed it to go on. You know, when you have that kind of infrastructure, whether it's the DHS or the CIA or a corrupt FBI, whatever, and now that it's in place, okay, so you've got this virus, that's where tyranny comes from. It doesn't come from my next-door neighbor. That person has no power, you know, unless I grant it to them and don't defend my home. You know, it's like, okay, I could have two doors down, I could have Adolf Hitler, but if he's not up there with guns ablazing like Stalin was, he has no power. Do you know what I'm saying? I don't know if that makes any sense, but yeah.
You know,
so somebody
on my forum the other night was trying to make an argument about the next election.
Yeah.
And I asked him. I said, after 235 years of failure in voting, do you really hold out hope that this will be the year? That your vote will change the world?
Funny.
And, I mean, let's look at it logically. Hitler was elected into office, wasn't he?
Oh, hugely. Twice, I think.
Overwhelmingly. Well, there you have it, folks. Voting works.
Works for some.
And I put up 1 Samuel 8:6. Said, think about that for a while, guys. That's where they were saying, hey, appoint us a king, would you?
Oh, my God. Yep.
See, this is why I've said all along, slaves vote.
Vote.
You know. People are under this false impression that if they can just vote in the right guy, it'd all be, you know, peaches and cream. And it's not, because even the best and most well-intentioned individuals succumb to the temptations that come with power.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's why, and the founders knew that. That's why they put those gains in the Constitution. Yeah, they knew better than anyone. In fact, I mean, let's take a look at all of them. And since they are men and they're not angels and they're not saints and neither am I, you know, they all succumbed to it. Washington did it. I'm sure Jefferson did. I don't know maybe what he did politically, but in his own life, I mean, he was, you know.
Why does the office of the president even exist? What was the purpose?
You know, that's a good question.
The purpose, I can tell you, you can go back and read the history. Look at what happened in the several states with the state legislatures. They went absolutely hog wild.
Mm.
They were passing all kinds of crazy laws.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And just tyrannizing entire countries or states.
States, right.
And the founders knew, they said, well, you know, there's got to be some kind of check to the power on these idiots. Because left to their own devices, man, they get into a gaggle like a bunch of old hens. And the next thing you know, you can't even breathe without being against the law.
Sure.
And so the president, aside from being the commander-in-chief of the military, was the chief executive officer. He was to be the CEO of the company. because that is what they were creating, after all, as a company, a corporation.
Yeah.
And as the head of the corporation, he had the right to reject any silliness that these fools might concoct in the two houses. So his primary purpose, aside from being the commander of the military in times of war, his primary purpose was to act as the last safeguard to the people's rights from a runaway Congress.
Wow.
And then if that didn't work, you know, then it had to resort back to the people. And, you know, it's interesting when we look at that 10th Amendment, that those rights are reserved to the states and the people respectively.
Yep.
The whole reason that we have a government at all is so that we, the people, don't have to fool with constant regulation and safeguarding of our rights. That's the whole purpose of having a daggum government to begin with, is to make sure that there's someone up there looking out for my rights as an individual. And if we're all, if we all agree that we're all created equal and nobody has more rights or less rights than another, then as long as Congress, if they, you know, that's why I've said this before, if they would take one average Joe citizen and set him up on a pedestal in the middle of Congress and make sure that every law that they pass will not negatively impact that man's rights in any way. If they would do that, we're all safe.
I agree. It's pretty crazy how it's gotten. It's out of control. It's just a big, giant leviathan. I don't know where to start. But I don't know what's going to, I mean, you know, none of us knows what they're going to do. That's why I do what I do. Every time I blog, every time I get on the air, every time I go to a meeting, it doesn't matter whether I'm talking to an editorial commentary in a newspaper or a city hall, you know, city council, or school boards and all these people that we're going up against Common Core. I'm going to tell the truth. And just say, okay, here's your action, here's your reaction. This is what's going to happen if you go with this.
Sure.
You know?
Well, and the other thing,
you
got
to spell it out for them,
Another approach might be to whatever specific thing they're trying to get through.
Yeah.
Make a list of the known negative influences of that particular subject.
Okay.
And then get up and inquire. Well, you know, we've heard a lot of the positive effects of allowing this to go through. Are there any negative things that might come out of this? I mean, is there anything, what are some of the negatives? Because, you know, the negatives might outweigh the positives.
Correct.
And once we get talking about the negatives, inevitably there's going to be a negative that is an infringement on someone's rights.
Yeah, because especially with this data mining that they want to do, I mean, the whole thing is just...
So at that point you say, even though there's all these benefits, and even though the negatives seem to be a fairly short list, this one negative here, this kind of bothers me, because... this is an infringement on an inherent right. So,
you know,
how do we get around infringing on this person's right? Where, how can we find the authority to do that? Where can we get the authority from to do that?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I'm gonna put my list together. I know that I just talked to my friend Chris by email today, and we're all gonna go.
This sounds like a great idea, but I just don't think I can get on board if it's going to be infringing someone's rights.
Exactly. And I think that there's other things that we need to show them, and we got to try not to, you know, foam at the mouth, because I tend to do that when I get going. So I have to step back and and do this quietly.
Well, it's
quietly
easy to do because it's a personal attack.
Well, even though I don't have kids, it is, because I know what they're trying to do. See,
certainly.
And the problem is the people that I'm going to be addressing, they're clueless, or the ones who are in on it don't want to hear it, you know, but
well,
you know what I
mean? That's the thing, and that's why I was saying, you know, maybe, not always, of course, there are going to be those times where you just have to come out with guns blazing, but there's more than one way to blaze
a cat,
the gun,
yeah.
You know?
And yeah.
So if you come across very receptive and conceding.
You know, because I know that there are certain aspects of this, C-SCOPE and Common Core, in their curriculum that we've been able to find and see, where they're literally flipping the whole thing on its head as far as our values as a country way back when, and they're touting communism, and they are just dissing capitalism and free markets and a free republic completely, and indoctrinating these kids on this stuff. And I think the question should be asked, if you have a chart to show them and say, are you guys okay with this? I mean, is that the kind of, you know, country you want now? Is that what you're advocating? That everybody
right.
is for the collective? And you have no rights? I mean, this is where this is headed. So,
hey, you know, because
you know,
this whole collective thing, it seems to me that this has been tried before. And it's never ended very well.
No, it hasn't. It ends in a lot of death and misery, and I've got books
to
prove it.
Is there a way that we can operate together as a collective and still respect one another's individual rights? Is that possible? Can we maybe explore a way that can be done? Oh, you'll have them frothing. You'll have them frothing at the mouth.
Yeah, I know. I've got to make sure that I take a deep breath before I let the blood shoot out of my eyes. So, yeah. Anyway, I want to thank you for taking the call. It's been great. If Bill's still on, I hope he wants to rant tomorrow. We'll do it. We've got an hour and a half, and we'll be there.
Absolutely. Well, I've only got about 6 minutes left, but
okay,
I do appreciate you calling in.
Thanks.
Not a problem.
Thank you.
Thanks, Linda. And that was the always lovely Miss Linda Sills. Linda does her show here on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. right from the left coast. And poor Linda, she's trapped out there in the land of fruits and nuts. And in all honesty, I think a lot of these people that we see as adversaries, they just simply don't know any better. Some do, certainly. But I think a good majority of them, they honestly, fervently believe in what they're preaching. And, you know, I don't think there would be any traction if we were practicing the principles that Christ preached while he was on the earth. If we were living our lives as Christians and extending love and compassion every single day to all those that we come in contact with, even the ones that are nasty and rude and obnoxious, it would be devastating to the adversarial position. It would be devastating to the other side of the argument, so to speak. So there really should be no argument. Discussions are always great. Arguments, they're just arguments. They're just that. They're just yelling back and forth, and very little, if anything, ever gets resolved. Once in a while, by pure happenstance, a sling or an arrow might slip through a fleeting crack and plant a word of truth in someone's heart. But it's pretty few and far between, you gotta admit. When you get right down to it, you and I, we can yell and scream till we're blue in the face. It's very few hearts and minds that we actually win. The only reason that anybody listening to my show right now is still listening at all is because they came to the show, they came to Patriot Families in search of, looking for answers, looking for the truth, realizing that, you know, something's bad wrong and the way we've been doing it all this time is not working. Something's got to give. There's got to be something else. And there is. And it's called the truth. And it's always the truth. And it can be wielded. The truth can be wielded in different ways. It can be wielded like a sword or a sledgehammer used to bludgeon your perceived enemies to death. Or it can be wielded like a flower. Soft, beautiful, delicate, still carries the same weight and the same truth. So I think we need to reevaluate how we approach our perceived enemies. That doesn't mean be fooled by those who are adversaries. It means be wise enough, and just maybe their hearts will be softened. I don't know. I think it's worth a shot. Not saying that we'll be able to carry that out every time. We're only human. Well, guys, an hour has gone by pretty rapidly. I want to thank everybody for joining me tonight and tuning into the show. And I'm going to leave you with a little promo for the other shows here, put together by our very own Mr. Michael Magic. I want to thank Miss Linda and Mr. Bill for calling in. Mr. Robert Kaplan, he called as well. All the good folks in our chat room, Doc, FT, Linda, Miss Yola, our very own Den Mother. Just keep trying. Don't give up hope. And we win in the end. So, God bless y'all. Thanks for listening. And here's that promo.
Blog Talk Radio and Patriot Family is where you need to be if you want to be informed and inspired 5 days a week. On Monday at 7:30 p.m., you can listen to the Constitution Hour. On Tuesday at 7 p.m., you can listen to Patriot Family Chat. On Wednesday at 7 p.m., you can listen to Right from the Left Coast. On Thursday at 6 p.m., you can listen to Patriot Education. And on Friday at 7 p.m., you can listen to Exposed but Never Forgotten. All times are Eastern Standard Time. Hope to see you there.